Hi, I'm Fred Schonenberg, and thank you for joining me on the Venture Fuel podcast. At Venture Fuel, we help companies find new solutions by partnering with the best startups from around the world. On the show, you'll learn the secrets of business leaders who tap into startups and the founders driving extraordinary results. We'll consider new ideas, stretch our mindsets beyond the status quo, and in the process, discover how to leap the competition and fuel personal growth. Hello and welcome to the Venture Fuel Visionaries podcast. I'm your host, Fred Schonenberg. I'm the founder of Venture Fuel. I am so excited to have you here today. This recording is from our What's Next Now series focused on corporate innovation. Vanessa Rosato, who's the head of growth at Venture Fuel, sat down with three of the leaders in corporate innovation to discuss best practices. How do you drive a corporate innovation practice for a large organization, regardless of what industry you're in? So we looked across multiple industries, shared best practices, learnings, and what's coming next, what trends they're excited about. The panel's unbelievable. It starts with Christina De Jesus. She is the Chief Innovation Officer at In-House Physicians. Helena Jaffe Weil, who's the Worldwide Venture Innovation Lead at Amazon Web Services. And Dion Lyle, who is the Director of Corporate Ventures at Huntington National Bank. They are going to talk about all the different ways you can lead transformation within your organization. I hope you enjoy.
Hi, everyone. My name is Vanessa Rosato. I'm the head of brand strategy at Venture Fuel, and it is my pleasure to welcome you to our final event of the year. What's Next is Now in Corporate Innovation. We are very excited to be joined by three innovators who are going to share with us their take on 2022 and what they're focused on on their predictions for 2023. Today we have with us Dion Lyle, Director of Corporate Ventures at Huntington National Bank, Christina De Jesus, Chief Innovation Officer at In-House Physicians, and Helena Jaffe Weil, Worldwide Venture Innovation Lead at Amazon Web Services. But before we get into our panel conversation, we're actually going to kick off with a short video from our founder and CEO, Fred Schonenberg, sharing what he's learned about innovation in 2022 and his predictions for 2023.
Hey, everyone. This is Fred Schonenberg. I'm the founder of Venture Fuel. So nice to be talking with you today. I wanted to share with you some of the learnings we've had in 2022, as well as a few predictions for 2023, particularly focused on corporate innovation. At Venture Fuel, we've run over 100 innovation programs for some of the best organizations in the world, ranging from Fortune 10 companies to nonprofits, across almost every sector you can think of, from automotive to pharmaceutical to media, technology, food and beverage, CPG. We've seen a few things, and I'm really excited to share with you what we've learned this year and what we're excited about moving forward. So the question I got was, what was your biggest learning about innovation in 2022? I would say the largest learning, the thing that came up the most often working with our corporate partners, was the need for tangible innovation. When you think of corporate and startups together, and specifically startups, you often think about moonshots or unicorns. I think that has evolved. I don't think you need unicorns. I think you need workhorses. You don't need moonshots. You need jump shots. Corporates in particular, and really any organization, is looking for results, for wins. So you're seeing a shift away from the sort of passive investment and hope for a 7 to 10 year exit, and more so focused on strategic insights gained, as well as running pilots and proof of concepts to actually get tangible results in the field quickly to then iterate on those, grow, invest, et cetera. So what lessons can I share from this year? I think the biggest thing is that innovation has moved from a nice to have to a core part of most companies' businesses. In the past, when you think of startup collaboration, it was almost like an innovation theater. You fly some executives out to Silicon Valley. That has changed entirely. Now it's a way to augment and accelerate R&D teams. It is a precursor to M&A to avoid paying some of the premiums there. And it's a really big part of a lot of growth strategies for most of the organizations out there. Over half of the Fortune 500s have a live accelerator, corporate accelerator running. There's thousands of active corporate VCs and thousands of innovation programs ranging from venture studios to pilot programs that are delivering results today. And this is something that is, I think, only going to accelerate across all sizes of organizations. So what do I see on the horizon for 2023? Certainly from a tech standpoint, AI and automation are catching up to their promise. And I also think areas like sustainability and DEI are going to become huge opportunities for startup and large organization collaboration. It's a very easy and smart way to introduce new suppliers, new opportunities, which can change our world for the best and for good. So thanks for hearing me out on this. This is my favorite subject in the world. So if anyone would ever like to talk about how we can help your organization grow faster by working with startups and new technologies, that's what we're here for. So I hope you have a great day and thanks for your time.
Thanks, Fred, for that message. All right. It's my pleasure now to invite our panelists to join me on the screen, as it were. And as I said earlier, you know, we're really delighted to have everyone here and to have a variety of different industries and actually functional areas that focus on innovation represented here today. So thanks to you all for your time. And I'm going to go ahead and jump right in because we have a lot of ground to cover today. So I wanted to start out talking about the role of innovation for organizations. We've still, over the last year, we've seen a tremendous amount of change for different reasons. I mean, in some ways, coming out of COVID, a return to like a pseudo normality, but the emergence of economic pressure driven by inflation. So innovation is one of those things that can play various roles in an organization, whether it's to find efficiencies or drive efficiencies and help achieve savings, whether it's to identify new sources of revenue or growth, or whether it's just to drive strategic learning and close gaps versus competitors. What role has innovation played this year for your organizations? And has that changed over the course of the year? And why? So I promise not to call on anyone, but I would therefore need a volunteer.
I can jump in if you'd like.
Thank you.
Sure. Hi, I'm Helena, and I run the Global Venture Innovation Program for AWS. And as part of that role, I connect with hundreds of enterprise customers throughout my year and hear firsthand from them what kind of challenges they're facing. And I think what I've noticed this year, the role that innovation is playing is getting closer and closer to the business transformation. So essentially, you know, technology is driving innovation, and innovation right now I see is driving business transformation. So, you know, pretty much what echoing what Fred was saying in terms of getting closer to delivering business outcomes, I think innovation today, what we're seeing is that it's driving actual line of trying to solve actual line of business challenges, deliver business outcomes for customers, you know, in Christina's case, for patients, right? And do it in a sustainable, ethical, transparent way. And that's what we're seeing as well as a global shift, you know, from technology standpoint. The budgets are shifting to line of business. Decision making is shifting to line of business. Enhance innovation as well as fueling it. And, you know, there are some reports that say that innovation is going to drive majority of business value by 2030. I think the numbers are something like $770 billion. So definitely worth to keep an eye on innovation and leverage it more as a core business driver versus an isolated, siloed effort like it has been, you know, some years ago.
Well, and it's so interesting, Helena, the way you talk about it. You know, in the past, we heard a lot of discussion of tech driving the digital transformation, but this is not about digital transformation anymore. We are in a digital world. This is about business transformation to meet our customers, our clients, wherever they are. So in terms of thinking about that evolution, Christina, Dion, you know, how have you seen that play out in your organizations and in your industries, which are in some ways quite distinct and actually in some ways facing many similar challenges from, you know, evolving customer demands and expectations to new requirements based on the way that shopper or that patient or banking customers' behaviors are changing?
Yeah, I mean, innovation has just been so mission critical for the healthcare industry. I think we've gone through so many radical changes over the past, you know, couple of years with the pandemic. We've made so many strides in terms of technological advancement. So it's actually expanded our capabilities now, and we're seeing new delivery care models, which is really interesting because we can see what we can actually do now, which we had the capabilities before, but we were kind of forced into having to deliver care in a different way and being able to communicate with patients, communicate with our care teams a lot differently. So it's just been so interesting and so rewarding to see the impact that we can make now that we're making bigger strides with innovation and kind of injecting it into organization-wide culture, which, as Helena was saying, sometimes it's been isolated. So now seeing it across organizations and implementing it into daily habits, you kind of see the fruits of your labor a little bit faster.
That raises an interesting question too. We always talk about, you know, are we focusing our innovation on the front end and the commercialization of our services or our goods, or are we thinking also about the role of innovation and how we manage our teams and how we distribute our work? And a lot of organizations who might have been very, very adept and functioning at a high level in terms of the front end customer, consumer, shopper, banker, you know, they're actually now looking at how to apply those models internally to how they treat their employees, or in your case, how they deal with the medical staff or delivery of service. Dion, I would love to hear your perspective on this, particularly because you're sitting in a unique point of view in this entire ecosystem, which is the corporate venture seat. You know, so the brief and the demand from the business for what you're sourcing in terms of deal flow or investments, how has the role of corporate ventures evolved this year in your perspective?
It's interesting. I've been in corporate ventures with Citibank previously and First Data. So I'm used to regulated entity corporate venture. And it's much more freewheeling now than it used to be. And partly referring to what Helena was talking about, the business unit connection, right? Yeah. We're very business unit driven. And so we're not able to just go out and do experiments or, you know, buy companies or whatever. But with that said, we did our first fintech acquisition this year to drive innovation. And what it was this really unique case of a business that had fallen behind the digital eight ball, and we had to catch up quickly. So we did a build buy partner analysis, went into the market and said, and I jokingly call fintechs two guys in a coffee pot. It was literally two guys in a coffee pot, and we didn't even keep the coffee pot. So we brought on this team, Code, hosted at AWS, and we pulled it in-house, and we only pulled one of the guys in. They joined us. And we stood up this business. We ring-fenced it initially outside our infrastructure. Like Christina's business, we're highly regulated. And so what we had to do was really make sure it was enterprise ready. And that was a big part of it. The code was there. There's so much being done in fintech today that Huntington now wants to be a better partner in the ecosystem through build by partner analysis. And now we'll invest directly, we'll acquire, we'll do all these different things. Whereas before, even for a bank of our size, we had this default to build. Let's go build it. You know what? Let's be honest with ourselves. There are people in Silicon Valley, New York, and now Austin and everywhere else that can build better, faster than we can. So I think that's the big change and shift for Huntington in 22 and moving into 23 is build by partner analysis. Don't default to build. There's plenty of good stuff out there. Let's learn to integrate. That's what I think our big lesson is. Coming into 23 is we need to learn to be an integrator.
It's such a great learning. And all of this is so fascinating because, you know, you're three people working in very distinct areas of innovation. You're working in three very distinct industries. And you're saying, look, it's actually about the tangible result. It's about the business unit demand for a specific solution to an existing problem. This is not about innovation tourism or experiments that exist on the periphery or the perimeter on top of the business.
If I can interject one thing there on the tourism, I was making this point the other day. I am not adverse to the petting zoo. I don't mind my Columbus, Ohio executives coming to Silicon Valley or New York, going to the Google headquarters or the Apple HQ or some cool startups or VCs.
Well, let's not forget AWS.
And AWS. Good point, Elena. But I'm not adverse to that because it opens their eyes to a different way of looking at the world. So like we did our first Money 2020, that's the big fintech event in my world. We started, I was going to invite three executives from Huntington. We ended up with 20 people coming. Every one of them came out of it, eyes wide open. Wow, what a big ecosystem, what a big universe. So exposing executives to the broader world has a value. I understand the bad reputation it gets if you don't do anything, but I do like exposing executives to that world.
Diane, it really resonates because what we, you know, what we've learned as well through venture innovation is that there are a number of things that customers are doing. And as you're saying, we're also seeing them, the evolution from let's just build by default, you know, ourselves with a consulting partner, et cetera, versus, you know, let's speed things up. Let's accelerate. If someone has spent, you know, 10 years and two PhDs developing a vocal biomarker, why would I want to build it, right? Let's partner up. And so what we're seeing is that essentially there are three needs for organizations. And one of them is, we call it Be Curious, but it's essentially exposing executives or organizations to thought leadership, to companies in a thoughtful way. So getting the right decision makers in the room, aligning on the business challenges that we want to solve, and then creating environments, being a showcase, you know, a visit, et cetera, an innovation day to learn. The second is all about the project. So essentially where, you know, Vanessa's world is, right? So how do you run a successful pilot? How do you integrate? How do you scale? How do you scout and source the partners? And then the third piece is strategic partnerships, or how do we think big together? So, you know, be curious, start small around the projects, and then think big. And I think that's another thing I'm seeing new this year is more and more organizations are realizing that they can't walk it alone. They can't do it alone. And not just them and the startup, but also other industry players. So we're seeing much more peer-to-peer collaboration with startups. Other industry players, like within healthcare, for example, payer, healthcare system, you know, et cetera, patient advocacy group coming together to solve a big challenge. And I think that kind of cross-industry collaboration is what's going to drive true, meaningful results in the future. So people working together is what we're always advocating for.
It's really fascinating. We see that a lot with our clients as well, that sometimes they're very focused on things that are linear to their specific industry. And it's once we start actually looking at adjacencies that we say, look, there's this piece of technology. It's operating at a really high level in this adjacent category. But if we bring it over into your business and we work directly with the founder, you know, to maybe evolve their solution to better suit your needs, then actually it's going to be a great fit for you. And our CEO likes to say, you're going to start on third base. Right? You're not going to have to go to spring training. You're not going to have to work your way there, spend 18 to 24 months getting to a proof of concept internally. And Deanne, I think it's really interesting that you guys had that default and now you're evolving to have the default be to ask the question of where we should start in that model. So I do want to actually build upon, Helena, what you're saying and go to our next conversation, which is, well, what lessons do you have from this year and what have you learned? I mean, we've talked about some of these already, but what do you know now that you didn't know in January of 2022, or what has surprised you about how your innovation strategies or plans have actually manifested over the last 12 months?
Fintech's had a big shift in valuations. And so one of the things for us is, you know, our CFO likes to think that the fintech ecosystem's on sale, so to speak, you know, as you look at valuations. And so we've become much more, I wouldn't say aggressive, but much more willing to look at different kind of structures. So when we go into a partnership, we used to go in with a very partner-centric view. Now we go in with a blank sheet of paper and say, is it a JV? Is it an acquisition? Is it an investment? Is it a joint development? We just announced a deal with InvestCloud where we jointly developed IP. And rather than keep the IP at the bank, we gave it back to them so they could sell it to other people. Then we get, you know, a piece of the pie later. We've gotten very creative in our deal-making boundaries and vectors. And I think that's super exciting. I think that's the biggest for us.
It's really fascinating because a very traditional enterprise or you know, industry-leading organization approach is to say that IP is ours. And we're actually going to try and block out our competitors. And you're going to go to a startup. Meanwhile, the startup's incentives are totally misaligned with that. They're trying to scale. And you're going to say to them, hey, partner with us. And we're going to close out the other 99% of the market to you, as opposed to, you know, a very big pivot in mindset, which is like, we're going to make our money by having some of our biggest competitors buy this service as it scales. And you, by the way, get the chance to shape it to best meet Huntington's needs as it scales along the way. That's super interesting. And these are conversations we have a lot too, because this question of collaboration or coordination can sometimes be at odds with traditional incentive structures or traditional ways of thinking about business, you know? So I guess that's one great learning, and thank you and lesson, Deanne, thank you for sharing that. Christina, as you guys look across the last year and healthcare in particular, I mean, since 2020 has gone through huge transformation. There's been a ton of lessons learned. But what would you say in the last 12 months has been a big eye-opener for in-house physicians in terms of your innovation strategy and plan and how you've gone to market? And I apologize. I said I wouldn't call on anyone and I just did it. So I hope that's okay.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, we talked a lot about cross-industry collaboration and we did a lot of that over the past couple of years, which I don't think was happening a lot previous to the pandemic or kind of going into the pandemic. Healthcare kind of isolated itself a lot when we looked at like what the capabilities were in terms of technology and ways that we can deliver care. So our focus has really shifted to figuring out how we can be more customer-centric, and it's come out of a lot of cross-industry collaboration. I mean, we're seeing so many different partnerships across different industries that you never would have thought of before. Even seeing Amazon, you know, trying to come into healthcare has been a big eye-opener for a lot of companies. And I think it's pushed a lot of other organizations to kind of do better, find different ways of doing things. I mean, healthcare needs a major facelift and it's not going to get done by itself the way that it is right now. So kind of seeing all this collaboration has been very inspirational to see what's actually possible. And I think, you know, within our organization previously, we kind of isolated our innovation efforts to certain teams. So being able to, you know, again, inject that into organization-wide culture, kind of all the way down into the trenches, really, for the people that are actually delivering the care all the way up to the top. It's really just been contagious in terms of what you can do and exposing people to what's out there. I mean, Dion talked a lot about kind of exposing people to different worlds or different industries, the way that people are doing things. And it's been very rewarding kind of doing that for people on the front line, because those are the people who are going to give you insights into, you know, what our patients and what the true consumers really need.
Actually, if I could build on that for a second.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, Christina, our worlds overlap. Healthcare is a big vertical for Huntington Beth. And so we've been looking very much at how physicians are paid, insurance gets paid, consumers get reimbursed and all of that. So there's a really big overlap. And this is a perfect example. Finance, payments, banking, healthcare, how money moves, embedded finance. These all come together, all hosted on AWS, of course. And these all come together in a mix that is really interesting. And to Christina's point, we're finding we're talking more to hospitals, payers, and insurers. So really interesting how all of the worlds kind of blend together and we can all help each other innovate for the good of the consumer, the patient, the client.
Yeah. And I think a lot of at least employers are exploring different financial models in terms of how to, you know, retain and recruit top talent. And that goes into their benefits packages. There's a lot more kind of on-site primary care wellness centers being implemented into their on-site solutions or even for their remote workforces. So trying to figure out the flexibility between care delivery and these remote workforces or hybrid workforces has been really interesting because there's kind of this push-pull in terms of how people want to pay for that and who's going to pay for that. And I think no one's really cracked the code on what the best way to do that is. But what we know is that employees are now looking at the benefits packages or what their new job is going to offer them in terms of health and wellness, work-life balance, and their overall health.
Christina, could you take a moment?
Oh, sorry.
Just because in-house physicians is so interesting, and would you just, for the folks in the audience who don't know exactly what in-house physicians does, would you just give a brief overview? Because it puts you at this unique vantage point too of how the patient gets served and what how hybrid and all this evolution of workforce management or where the workforce is located is actually impacting people's expectations around care and service as well.
Yeah, so in-house physicians primarily does employer solutions. So whether it's supporting meetings and events, either domestically or internationally, whether it's their executive team or their whole attendee base for incentive programs or executive conferences, things like that, we provide urgent care to really bring access to care kind of right where you are and make sure that you're maximizing the productivity because, you know, there's a lot of things that people just don't know, especially in the world of COVID, where a sniffle can either mean COVID or it could mean you just got off a plane and you're just feeling under the weather. And then we also have Asterias Health, which is kind of this hybrid model of worksite health. So we've kind of merged both digital health and the on-site human touch and nursing care to provide this ecosystem of health resources for both remote workforces and on-site workforces, which we found to be very beneficial for employers when they're looking for a solution for this kind of evolving workforce, which is really unpredictable right now. So we know that the traditional models are extremely expensive, but digital health and like this digital transformation has allowed us to figure out how we can crack the code on making it more affordable, thereby expanding access to care, which has been a huge issue just in terms of healthcare delivery across the country.
Thanks for doing that. Just because your comments are really interesting and to give folks some context and sort of what your vantage point is from an organizational perspective. Definitely. So, you know, we talked about lessons and learnings. Oh, Helena, I think you were going to jump in with something. I want to go back to you before we move on to the next.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a comment that what Christina and Deanna are mentioning that also resonates. And we have seen that across the board from remote care delivery as a challenge or use case that a lot of companies are trying to solve, from healthcare systems to pharma companies, right? How do they deliver care better for patients in certain clinical trials or in a certain treatment? And also from the, you know, financial services standpoint or fintech standpoint, you know, the payment systems or, you know, verification, rapid verification of eligibility and then seamless payment solutions, et cetera. Like the words begin to collide and you already don't know where the payments end and the healthcare system begins, you know? And I just wanted to say as well that, you know, the question of who pays for what is always going to be the question in healthcare, but hopefully by working together, we can solve that and deliver some good customer experience.
Because that's it, right? At the end of the day, this is what's driving all of it is this, and it's, you know, it's not not to point out Amazon, but it's the Amazonification of our expectations of like that instantaneous delivery of customer great service. An instantaneous service and almost like predictive service, right? Of what we need and when and how we need it.
The customer obsession in innovation. Yeah, and I think that's what we're seeing as well, you know, rooted in design thinking, nothing new in that sense from methodology standpoint, but the way we're seeing organizations are beginning to approach it is, you know, aligned with our leadership principle of customer obsession and the techniques we use, like working backwards, right? Where we truly try to dive into the problem. We're seeing that much more right now with other customers where they also want to figure out, get to the depth of the problem first before trying to jump to solutions or conclusions or getting excited about technology. And that's also the shift, I think, in mindset that we're observing.
So that takes me to my next question, which is we've talked a lot about the role of innovation this past year. We've talked about learnings and lessons and implications. What do you see being the role of innovation for you in the coming year? Or what are your predictions for the coming year in terms of how you will seek to leverage innovation to drive organizational transformation?
I think in banking, one of the things that we're seeing is we all talk about digital transformation, digitization, et cetera. But in banking and in payments particularly, and you'll realize this in your own real world examples, it's about real time. So I think the biggest trend for us is real time. And what's interesting is like you write a check, because we're Americans, we still write checks. The rest of the world does not. But ACH, right? ACH, a way to make a payment online, it's digital, but it's 2 to 3 days. It's not real time. We now have systems, one in the US, the first new payment rails in the US came out 2 years ago called RTP, real-time payments, from TCH, the clearinghouse. The UK just celebrated the 10th year anniversary of their real-time payment network the same time we launched ours. So to give you an idea, as Americans in payments, we're a wee bit behind. We're catching up. But that is the biggest trend I see coming. And I'll point out one other thing, and not to make this a payment nerd thing, but it comes with data. There's a standard called ISO 222 that allows the payment to travel with data. That's huge in the B2B world because it allows you to have the remittance data connected to the payment. So when you say, oh, what's this payment for? Oh, the data is right there. Sounds minor. We all don't think about it. In the B2B world, that's a huge leap forward. So data connected to payments and going from batch to real time, because none of us would accept batch in our day-to-day lives. Like this video thing, you ask us a question and 20 minutes later, we answer it. That wouldn't work, right? It's a real-time world. That is the biggest innovation trend in banking, payments, finance across the board.
Yeah. And I would say those two things really translate over to healthcare somehow, some way. But I mean, this concept of real time, there's a lot of data that's being collected, which is enabling a lot of AI solutions. So we'll see a lot more asynchronous care, which is kind of giving this like real-time gratification of people being able to, you know, share what's going on with them, and also enabling, you know, providers to kind of steer clear of burnout because they don't have to spend so much time trying to see patients back to back to back. And they're able to optimize the time spent with patients because they get all this data collected ahead of time. And then we can focus more on what matters, like the social determinants of health, like what's going on at home that's really driving these issues. So it's just so funny how some of these things are translating over to the different industries, but they're very, very real.
Yeah, I could just add on the specifically on the data in AI side that I think next year we'll be seeing much more use for AI enabled solutions in terms of, you know, real time insights, for example, to make business decisions, to design new products, to get to new customer segments, get the sentiment, you know, anything from video, language, speech, etc. So analyzing it in real time and then providing a meaningful action. So again, connecting back to the business results, right? A lot of, I heard somewhere over 75 or something percent of AI projects or pilots or algorithms don't make it to production. So I think next year we'll start seeing more of that making its way into actually impacting business results. And also providing opportunities for teams that are maybe not skilled or not staffed enough to work with AI with, you know, low or no code solutions to also leverage and harness that technology, because it wasn't there before, right? We didn't have the compute power and other technical sort of infrastructure to make it happen. We do now. So I think as with all of these kinds of technologies that are following the exponential growth curve, I think that's what we'll be seeing next year as well. And definitely real-time insights for business decision. Again, it could be for top line or bottom line, right? We could be generating new revenue streams or fixing the basics, right? You know, in terms of cost savings, which I think is going to be another big challenge or focus area for next year in terms of frugality. That's one of our leadership principles. So we've been living with that for a while. But I think lots of other customers will be realizing it now that you want to do you know, more with less, and startups are an excellent solution for that. But overall, I think that innovation will be gearing towards how do we achieve business outcomes? How do we become more efficient? You know, even sustainability that we, Fred talked about from the beginning, how are we, you know, not only reducing our impact and following the ESG, you know, principles and our agenda on that, but also becoming more efficient. I'm seeing as well that efficiency is basically the new sustainability these days, right? And I think all of that will be with limited resources will be critical next year to place our bets correctly and then leverage technology in a clever way and build those partnerships that can really allow you to do more for your customers with less resources.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Helena, you talked about partnerships. I think tying it all together, we'll see a lot more partnerships moving into 2023. We saw it a lot in 2022, but I think we'll see more relationships not interacting just as vendors, but they'll kind of close those gaps and optimize some of those efficiencies through partnerships.
Right. So here's my next question then, because it sounds great, right? We have innovation. We're going to meet with all these startups. We're going to do all these innovative things. We're going to satisfy all of our customers' unmet needs. We're going to solve the jobs to be done. I'm throwing out every phrase I can think of to throw out to paint a beautiful picture for innovation. One of our principles of Venture Fuel. I wasn't going to say that, but one of our principles of Venture Fuel as a company culture is grit, because we are in the business of innovation, and innovation is hard. Some innovation programs have a failure rate of up to 90%, and the ones that are doing it well, quote, failure rates as low as 30%, I guess a 70% success rate, right? What about your innovation strategy or plan for next year is keeping you up at night, and why?
Well, I think you bring up a good point about grit. And one reason I like exposing our executives to fintech startups is they're all about grit, right? Every startup you meet had to go through fundraising, had to get turned down by 78 VCs, had to build when the tools weren't ready, had to change an industry, a highly regulated, highly fragmented industry. So they've already got their grit. And one thing I love about our innovation journey is exposing our executives to that side of it, meeting these founders, engaging with these founders. The other part of what you just said is that finishing, right? Now, when I was Citi Ventures many years ago, I remember I launched to a great thud, a mobile payments platform that 8 people used and cost us millions of dollars. And I'm thinking, well, okay, I'm done here. I'll clean out my desk and move on. And the COO at the time, Don Callahan at Citi, said, whoa, what are you doing? You made us a mobile bank. What is innovation failure, right? So I beg the question, if you do an experiment, it's a good one, and I'll quote Jeff Bezos has a great expression, which is, you know, if you go into an experiment knowing the outcome, it's not an experiment. Yeah. Every innovation experiment has an outcome. Some are market positive or revenue positive or cost savings positive. Some are just learnings. If you lose the learnings, you lose the experiment. But I would say that failure rate is a relative term. I think every experiment serves a very good purpose, my opinion.
Learning rate. That's a good point. New term. Yeah, learning rate.
I like that. I'm going to write that. So nothing's keeping you up at night, Dan.
I don't know. I'll tell you what it is. And I've got a couple corporate events. Now, granted, more fintech bank focused, but I'm sure this translates. My biggest issue, and I've heard this from every banker, every fintech I talk to, business unit engagement.
Yeah.
They're so busy optimizing, you know, making efficient, getting their profit, making sure they have the right team in place, that when I come with, hey, here's this cool AI thing, they're like, Jesus, Dion, I don't have time for this. I'm busy running a freaking $82 billion business. Get out of my hair. Come on. I don't have time for this. That is my number one innovation. And by the way, a million years ago when I was Citi Ventures, it was the same issue. It hasn't changed. Getting the gears of business unit to innovation to work together, that's what keeps me up at night.
It's really interesting because we hear this question a lot from folks of who's doing it well and how and why. Why are they being successful? Not just in terms of their pilots or their experiments, but then taking those and scaling them across the organization. And you know what you genuinely see is and Christina, you said this before, and I noted it. It's you said innovative organization. So it's not about an innovative team or an innovative functional area, right? The innovation team are going to be the innovative ones, and they're going to run around doing cool things, and it doesn't matter for everybody else. But how do you drive a culture of innovation within the organization? And how do you therefore make these experiments or this startup engagement, particularly the way we think about it, how do we create an engagement platform that takes the business unit and we're actually solving against their most pressing challenges to unlock and to make sure they hit that $82 billion goal with, as Helena said, fewer resources, not just flat budgets or down budgets in many cases, but fewer people, or they lack the technical or talent skills they need to embed, right? Which is the talent crisis and the competition for tech talent and innovation talent is really, really, I mean, across the competitive talent landscape, that's a particularly challenging area to recruit unless you are a core tech company. So I love that point around innovative organization and BU engagement, Deanne, because it's such an important one. Helena, you wanted to jump in. I want to go to you.
Thank
next.
You. Yes, if I can build on what Deanne is saying. So essentially what we're seeing as well, very very similar observation in terms of the line of business engagement. And what we have learned in working with hundreds of these customers is that eventually, or essentially what it is the companies are missing the innovation foundation. So essentially those organizations, like what is an innovative company? Like, what does that really mean, right? That means in our language, at least, we have, you know, internally at Amazon, we use the 4 core pillars of innovation. It's organization, mechanisms, architecture, and culture. It's, you know, public knowledge, just like our leadership principles. But what we have done is we have tried and started to assess and help companies understand where they are on the innovation maturity curve. How can they get to the next level? And what we are seeing as well in talking to all of these customers is that everyone is on their different journey in terms of innovation maturity, and even sometimes different business units are ahead of the curve. And if you don't have, just like in construction, if you don't have a solid foundation, it's very hard to, you know, you can come up with a great design for a bedroom or a kitchen, right? But if you don't have a foundation to build the house on and the walls are falling apart and, you know, the roof is leaking, then even if you have a great kitchen or bedroom, et cetera, it's not going to be an effective or safe place to live, right? Or beautiful place to live. And so that's what we're seeing as well. So, and it comes down to, again, something that, you know, I've realized a while ago that innovation, you know, there's often a question, can you manage innovation? Just like managing creativity, right? It's so creative, it's so fluffy, you know, elegant, etc. It's gritty. It's hard. It's like grinding, you know, teeth, and it's pragmatic and methodical. So unless you have a methodical approach to innovation that includes, you know, from an organizational standpoint, for example, how are we structured? How are our goals aligned, right? Innovation, technology, and business roadmaps, are they aligned? Or do we come to the business and try to get them in? Or do we build the strategy together from the top, right? So for example, our CEO has a business transformation agenda, and then we bring in all the lines of business together and we weave that roadmap as one, right? So what are the goals? How are we reaching them? Then innovation becomes integral. Then, you know, we're out of job, but that's okay, right? Because innovation is going to be a job of line of business, as it should be eventually, right? Then mechanisms, processes, you know, you mentioned, how do we partner with our partners, right? Companies, how do we onboard them, integrate them? What is the process, fast track, et cetera, internal processes, approvals, all of the kind of admin stuff that sinks innovation on a daily basis. How do we solve for that? And then mechanisms, and then architecture, you know, the technology component, the tech talent, the upskilling, the experimentation space, like, for example, what JP Morgan built with, you know, the sandbox experimentation cloud, right, et cetera. So how do we actually, and then integration plan for technology. You mentioned, you know, bringing that startup and, you know, working out the solution. It has to go back into the mothership. How is it going to go back, right? How are we going to support it? And then the last piece, of course, is the culture. So that's the where sort of the trick is, right? How do you build that culture of calculated risk-taking, customer obsession? How do you integrate design thinking ideas around work backwards from the customer and then find the solution into daily life? And I think that's where I'm hoping, that's what keeps me up at night when organizations, you know, don't have the foundation, but, you know, are investing in corporate accelerators and other things before building that kind of clarity across the lines of business. And I think there is a huge potential if we get a little more organized that way.
I'm not even going to re-summarize that. That was a great before. Christina, did you want to add anything of like what's keeping you up at night? Because I want to move to popcorn since we only have about 15 minutes left. But before we do that, I wanted to give you a chance to.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's very in line with Dion and Helena. I mean, alignment is extremely hard. I mean, without innovation, aligning business units on anything is difficult. And I think talking about innovation is just not enough. Like, we've done some creativity readiness assessments just to tee everyone up from the ground up, kind of building out our innovation processes. And it was a big eye-opener in terms of seeing where people were at and where we need to meet them and, you know, what they're looking for, what gaps they're actually experiencing to achieve what we want them to achieve. So, I mean, and that's also trying to navigate through this evolving future of work. And I think that's what's really keeping me up at night is, you know, we fix or we try to solve for one type of workforce. And, you know, in the next 6 months, we just don't know if it's going to be the same because it's been changing and we've been going through cycles. Things get lifted, things get re-implemented. So I think the applicability of what we're doing to the future of work has been really keeping me up at night because it shifts your budgets, it shifts your processes, it shifts your engagement. So just trying to figure out how we can remain flexible as things start to change has been really, it's been a challenge, but it's been kind of a fun challenge to experiment with because now we know with every situation what works and what doesn't. So I feel like hopefully we've gone through every type of workforce model that we can apply it as things start to change, but you never know.
We're workforce in the metaverse. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm just kidding. We can't have an innovation discussion about without talking about the metaverse. Okay. I want to talk to you guys about what you're most excited about, but I'm actually going to hold that to be our last question. We have about 15 minutes left and I'd love to go to popcorn. So what we're going to do, and we do this sometimes at Venture Fuel, because there are a lot of buzzwords around innovation, particularly tech innovation. And we've actually talked about some of them today. So I'm going to throw one out and whoever wants to take it, and if no one wants to take it, we'll move to the next one. Just kind of, what's your reaction to when you hear the phrase digital transformation?
I actually wrote a blog about this, so I'll take this one. It's too big to succeed. It's too amorphous. Digital transformation, what does that mean? I just said digital, we're digital, ACH is digital, but it's not real time, so it doesn't do anything. And I wrote, my blog was basically, you have to break it into pieces and make it more definable with better KPIs.
I love that. So last year, as an anecdote, a quick anecdote, we do these What's Next Now, we've been doing them now for a while, and we pick a topic. Last year, we picked data. Way to go, Vanessa. Everyone's like, what does that mean? I was like, data. We're going to do an event about data. They were like, Vanessa, that doesn't mean anything. What about data? I was like, oh, good point. Okay, guys. So much like digital transformation, not enough detail. Okay, data privacy.
Now, that's a biggie in payments. And Christina, I know you way yes. as well. Basically, I'll share an anecdote. I was working on a payments for automobiles project. And you think, automobiles, no privacy issue. Well, it is, because where your car goes determines some things about you and could be considered, you know, PII, right? Personally identifiable information. So just because it seems like it might not be a privacy issue doesn't mean it's not. So my take is to default, strip it down in every way you can think of. And the horrible example somebody brought up, a husband goes after hours to a bar when he told his wife he was working. The insurance statement comes in and says your insurance went up because you were in this neighborhood after 12 o'clock on a Tuesday. And the wife's like, whoa, honey, that's not what you told me. Well, that's a privacy violation. So the reason I share that bizarre example is you never know what privacy is lurking.
And it's so interesting to earlier this year, you keep bringing up payments, Dan, but earlier this year, we hosted an event about the future of fintech, and Nisha Desai, who's the founding partner at Anav Capital, and they are focusing, they invest in fintech startups. You know, we closed out the event. We always say, what's your advice, or what are your thoughts, or, you know, what are you parting thoughts? And she said, pay attention to payments tech in the future of advertising. Payments tech in the future of advertising. And I have a media marketing, digital advertising background. She goes, yeah, because once you basically are, you know, once all this data privacy goes into effect, the only people who are going to have your information about what you're buying, when, where, how, and why you're buying it are going to be your payments fintech companies. Right. And so it was like a very interesting, you know, and Christina, this speaks to your point from earlier, where we see a lot of these verticals colliding, and we're used to thinking about them pre-digital transformation as a sort of independent verticals that exist alongside one another. And as a consumer, I can pick and choose where to share my information. But all of a sudden, where, you know, you have to buy your car, right? If you want to have a car, you have to buy it. Or if you're going to buy it, you have to pay for it. Or even if you're going to rent it, you have to pay for it. Well, who gets that information? And what does that information say about you? That takes me to our next popcorn, AI, artificial intelligence.
So has anyone been on Twitter lately? There's two threads going. One is this AI that takes a photo of you and makes it all cool and colorful. I think it's called Sensei AI. Yes. The other one is this program that writes for you. And now all the writers on Twitter are like, hey, we're out of a job in 2 years because everything's going to be AI written. I don't buy that. But it is interesting to see in the thread of the Twittersphere, AI is becoming, and somebody made the point earlier, it was a really interesting subject. Now it's being built out and used.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think there are some benefits to it, right? Like you can free up some resources that can then be utilized elsewhere. You can free up some talent that can be utilized elsewhere. It reduces human error. But I think especially in the, you know, applicability in healthcare, it still does not provide that human-to-human interaction that you need in healthcare and, you know, talking to patients, interacting with patients, and getting them to actually adhere to their care plans. So I think it can be a good and a bad thing, but I think we'll see a lot more moving into 2023 because I think people are kind of unlocking different ways that we can utilize it in the best way possible.
Yeah, to comment on that, probably, you know, especially in healthcare, we've done a couple of projects around this and thinking about some of our customers, like, for example, Chiron Medical Technologies, a fantastic startup out of the UK that does AI for breast cancer screening. So their position is never to replace a radiologist, but to be a second pair of eyes. And their technology actually can spot cancer when a human eyes can miss it. And they're acting as a, you know, essentially as a second peer who looks at it. And they're offering that solution essentially drives access and affordability to diagnostics that are really important, and especially in developing countries where there aren't, in our country, there aren't enough radiologists. So in developing countries, it's even a larger problem. So technologies like this, I think, that augment the human. And, you know, my sister-in-law is a doctor, so I know quite a bit about the importance of human interaction. You can't replace some of those, you know, things, but you can augment it, right? And we've seen, especially with COVID, we've been doing quite a bit of work trying to surface some of those life-saving technologies that can help the physicians, anything from, you know, preventing deterioration in, you know, clinical setting in ICU, for example, or in ER before the patient deteriorates going to ICU, or helping with, you know, liquid biopsy, so digital pathology, etc. So preventing disease, treating disease, helping to help patients stick to medication, you know, adherence, etc., remote patient monitoring. I mean, one example I can bring up, because it's another public reference, is we've helped another awesome startup, Agenta, recommended them to apply to a NASA use case around mental health remote monitoring, voice enabled. And you know, it was, again, featured in, I believe, Forbes some time ago, that they won the grant, and that they're now building, again, AI-enabled, voice-enabled technology to help our astronauts who are going to deep space, so first to the moon, then to Mars, 2.5 years alone in space. We've all been through COVID. It's a long time. They need some mental health support. So helping with that. So that kind of technology is really exciting for us, for me personally. And I think that's the future. So combining the human element to drive goodness in the world, again, be it on the healthcare side, on the sustainability side, right? Thinking about our resources and climate and footprint and all of that with technology that exists. And I think a lot of it will be driven by AI. Again, AI can be a buzzword, but I think AI enabled, our AI core, right? And AI enabled, a lot of AI enabled solutions we will be seeing, right? And then they will probably be enabled by AI core startups or technologies.
So we have about 5 minutes left, and I want to make sure we have time for our last question. And last popcorn, sustainability.
Super important. Yes, I'm just one. Yeah, I just want to. There's something to feel like I'm talking too much. I can take it if no one wants it.
Well, sustainability is interesting because I'll come back to payments, fintech, finance. Sustainability for banks, I mean, there's now estimates, you know, it's a $1 billion opportunity for banks right now, right? To invest in sustainability, to finance sustainable projects and so on. So this is an opportunity for banks to have a really positive impact on the world, right? By financing and leaning into the financial opportunity around sustainability. So it's on our radar. I wouldn't say we have a huge, well thought out plan yet, but it's on our agenda for 23 to become a bank that looks at sustainability very closely.
So that's going to take me into the last question for today. We have about 3 minutes left. You know, what are you, and Dan, because you talked about next year, what are you most excited about that you see coming on the horizon, whether that's something that you're doing organizationally, something that's in your strategy and plan that you're going to look for solutions around, or just the trend in the trends that you see scaling?
Yeah, number one is just doing more acquisitions, partnerships, and just really pulling the ecosystem into the bank and getting the bank to be more involved in the ecosystem. It's really making us a better team player with APIs, with like a sandbox platform like JPMC did. We're a much smaller bank, but there's no reason we can't be a really active partner in the ecosystem. By far, number one, that's what you're going to see from Huntington in 23 is us reaching out more, us pulling things in more, acquisitions, investment, the partnerships, all of the above. Just really active ecosystem player.
Awesome. Christina, Elena,
Yeah, I'm for our organization, I'm really excited about, you know, continuing our efforts with the Sirius Health, which is really focused on making healthcare actually easy to navigate, which it is very much not right now. And then, you know, making it accessible and also addressing clinician burnout, which was, you know, at the forefront before the pandemic. And then after the pandemic, it was just, you know, a huge burden on the healthcare system. So trying to put these providers and the patients in their families first, all at the same time, has been really exciting for me. I experienced burnout when I worked in the hospital. So that is really, you know, near and dear to me, but I know that that's what's actually driving a lot of the clinician shortages that we're seeing now, which is impacting access to care. So I think just kind of seeing what the impact is going to be across the country is really exciting.
And I'm very excited to help our customers delight their customers and touch human lives. I think that's sort of what drives us every day with what we do. And if I think about the, you know, kind of bringing it all back together in terms of trends and technologies and excitement for next year, I think in terms of AI, sustainability, and diversity, inclusion, and equity, we're seeing much more innovation being a fuel there. And we are really excited to help our customers get there and drive results through these efforts.
Well, Christina, Helena, Dion, thank you so much for your time today. This has been a fascinating conversation. And thanks for those of you who are watching on LinkedIn and YouTube. We are looking forward to closing out an awesome year in 2022 in innovation and excited about everything that is coming on the horizon in 2023. If you are interested in learning more about Venture Fuel or corporate innovation and startup engagement and collaboration, we invite you to follow us on social media and check out our podcast, The Venture Fuel Visionaries, where you'll also be able to hear excerpts from today's event. Thanks, everyone, and have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thanks so much for joining us today. What a pleasure to learn from three visionaries that understand this corporate innovation world as well as anyone. I really enjoyed listening. I hope you did too. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with any of your colleagues that might enjoy it. And of course, if you could follow us at Venture Fuel on LinkedIn, we post all sorts of thought leadership articles as well as the best of what comes out of our events and podcasts. So hope to see you over there as well. And all the best to you and your family. See you next time.